If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm David Rothkopf. I'm joined today by Chris Kottmeyer. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well.
And even without our friend Riley Fessler, who's out today, we will try to give you a little bit of a look at what's going on in the news and some perspective on it. Chris will dish up the news. I'll dish up the perspective. I think we've got five stories for you. Chris, what's the first one?
In the landmark criminal trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump, prosecutors have accused him of orchestrating a long-running conspiracy to influence the 2016 election through illicit means, including a hush money payment to adult film actress Stormy Daniels. Assistant District Attorney Matthew Colangelo described the scheme as straightforward election fraud, asserting that the payment was intended to silence Daniels and avoid bad press that could damage Trump's candidacy, especially in light of the Access Hollywood tape scandal that emerged around the same time. Trump's defense argues that the transactions were not illegal and are common in the media industry. What do you think about that, David?
Maybe we ought to get into that business. You know, we'll get some foreign policy people who don't like the way their things are being covered, and you know, they can pay us some money and then we won't talk about
it. It's very common. Happens all the time.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that would be, yeah, it's very, happens all the time. Yeah, so you know what else is common? Trump getting charged with something that involves fraud or lying. Every crime that he gets charged with involves that to some degree. Now, some involve sexual assault, some involve stealing elections, some involve colluding with Russians, some involve obstruction of justice. But there's an undercurrent to all of them, which is lying and fraud, because that's the guy's character. And he hasn't been held accountable for it because our legal system, if you've got enough money, includes many ways for the rich to avoid accountability. Even if this trial ends up finding him innocent or with a hung jury, 6 weeks of his behavior put in the public spotlight is not going to be good for him politically. And we're going to see a great example of that today when the judge hears for the first time, but I will predict not for the last time, about Trump's violations of the gag order, which is common, not a violation of his First Amendment rights, which continued late into yesterday, early into this morning. Every single day he's gone after jurors and witnesses in a way that he was not allowed to, in a way that could be seen as intimidation and skew the trial. And he's going to have to sit there and listen to somebody else be in charge, and he's not going to like it. And that's going to resonate for weeks or months to come. What do you got next?
Israel appears poised to intensify its military operations in Gaza, as evidenced by satellite imagery showing a significant buildup of Israeli military forces near the Gaza Strip. According to Al Jazeera's analysis, over 800 military vehicles have been deployed to bases near Gaza, with new military outposts established around the enclave, suggesting a sustained Israeli campaign. This military escalation comes in the wake of Hamas's October 7th attack and the ongoing conflict that has led to severe casualties and displacement.
And it comes a day after a mass grave was found there in Gaza, and it comes as famine continues to take its toll on the people of Gaza. And it is a reminder that this conflict is far from over, its human toll is far from over, and that it will not be over for a long, long time, because even after the fighting stops, there's a big question. Question is, who will rebuild Gaza? Gaza is a heap of rubble right now. There is no fit place for people to live in Gaza. Critical infrastructure is not there. It will cost billions to rebuild it. The Israelis are not going to pay it. Neighbors, Arab states that may care about the outcome aren't going to build it unless there is some strong, clear Palestinian government operation in place and there is a path to a two-state solution. The international community will be slow to respond or to police Gaza. And I think we have to get adjusted to the idea that the humanitarian crisis in Gaza could last not for weeks, not for months, but for years. What's the next story?
U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria were targeted in two separate attacks involving rockets and explosive drones within 24 hours, marking the first such incidents after nearly 3 months without such events. In Iraq, two drones were intercepted, while in Syria, five rockets were launched at a base in Rumelin, but resulted in no casualties or significant damage. These attacks resumed following a pause, which was maintained since late January due to pressure from Iraqi authorities and Iran after a period of frequent strikes attributed to Iran-backed Shiite groups in retaliation for U.S. support for Israel.
The shadow wars between Israel and Iran and Israel's allies like the U.S. and Iran looks like it's ramping back up, and that the brief sort of overt warfare that we saw a week ago is now going to be replaced with these kind of attacks. And there seemed to be more activity from Hezbollah against northern Israel as well. And I just expect we're going to see more and more of this, and we're going to go back into the old mode of having Iranian proxies do Iran's dirty work against those that Iran sees as enemies. Next.
Protests against the war in Gaza have escalated across numerous U.S. universities, leading to various confrontations and a significant response from law enforcement and university administrations. Demonstrations started at Columbia and Yale and have spread to other prestigious institutions such as Berkeley, MIT, and the University of Michigan, with students setting up encampment and staging protests. These protests have sparked heated debates and resulted in numerous arrests, including a notable police intervention at NYU. The protests have been marred by reported incidents of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, intensifying tensions on campuses. In response to the unrest, Columbia University moved to virtual classes due to safety concerns.
This is a complicated situation. People who make it out to be a simple one are misstating the facts. There is never a place for anti-Semitism. There's never a place for Islamophobia. There's never a place for intimidation or violence on a college campus. But there should always be a place for people to express peacefully differing views. There should always be a place for people to criticize governments, or to criticize policies, or to criticize wars that are being undertaken, and to seek peace. There should always be a place for those things if the protesters or those who are expressing those views do so in a way that does not disrupt life in the campus, does not intimidate people. But what's happened here is that there's been a lot of pressure on these universities to treat even peaceful protests as manifestations of anti-Semitism, when in fact they were not. That's not to say that there haven't been manifestations of anti-Semitism, and those were guilty of those, or those were guilty of Islamophobia, ought to be dealt with in an appropriate way, including conceivably being expelled from the universities. But criticizing Gaza, or, you know, the war in Gaza, or seeking a ceasefire, or seeking an independent state for Palestinians, or criticizing the Israeli government, or asking questions about policies from Zionism to the Palestinian chants, that they want to control the whole region. These are the kind of things that are supposed to be on the docket and discussed in the environment of universities in a safe place. And we are going to see more of this for the reasons we talked about earlier. The Gaza question is not going to go away. The protests are not going to go away. These could go on for months and months. And universities, I went to Columbia. In fact, my whole family went to Columbia. My great-grandfather went to Columbia. My grandfather went to Columbia. My parents went to Columbia. I went to Columbia. My children went to Columbia. I don't think that sending the police in is the right response. I don't think that NYU having the police come in with peaceful protests is the right response. I don't think that, the University of Southern California taking the valedictory address away from somebody whose views were anti-Israeli is the right response. In fact, I think they're the wrong response. And I think they're just going to make this problem worse for some time to come. Chris?
The Conservative government in Britain, led by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, has successfully passed a controversial immigration bill known as the Rwanda Deportation Bill, despite significant opposition and criticism. The legislation enables the deportation of some asylum seekers to Rwanda, where their claims will be processed, and if successful, they will be resettled, but not in Britain. This move has sparked widespread condemnation from human rights groups, immigration experts, and legal critics, who argue it is inhumane, impractical, and undermines the UK's commitment to the rule of law. The bill has faced numerous legal challenges and is seen as a diverse political strategy by the Conservative Party to address immigration anxieties and improve their standing against the Labour Party.
Yeah, this is a terrible policy, implemented in a terrible way. It's kind of indefensible. I noted the other day that Ed Luce made a comment that the only policies that the Sunak government's getting right are ramping up their support for Ukraine. It's a little bit like Mike Johnson. It's sometimes possible for people who support a raft of bad policies to do something correct. But this Sunak policy is indefensible and is sure to be challenged in countless ways before it can be fully implemented because it's contrary to international law. It seems to be contrary to some British law. And so repercussions will follow. It's a bad manifestation of kind of xenophobia, fear of globalization that has struck almost every country. Well, that's good roundup for today. We've got a full day of programming up and around you. We've also got an event tonight in Washington, D.C., where we're with our friends at the New Republic. We're going to do a conversation with Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. If you're around and you want to come to that event, see if you qualify for an invitation, contact us via our website or any of the other means known to you, and we'll see if you can squeeze you in. It's full up, practically full up right now. And we'll report on the event tomorrow, and we'll also make the event via podcast late tonight. So a lot to look forward to today, and we'll be back here talking to you tomorrow on the DSR daily, just like we were today. Until then, bye-bye.